due to our level of advancement, we also need to engage ourselves in the Pancharatra meeting. It means that we need to engage our senses, body, mind, and intelligence also in deity worship. And Krishna has been so kind that he has manifested himself in a form of Archa Vigraha, as a deity, in this material world, to actually accept our service and that we can be engaged in service to him. So we know that we usually worship Radha Krishna, but we do it in the mood of awe and reverence, so it's more Lakshmi Narayan mood, because we need to have respect. We need to cultivate our attitude of respect, that we wouldn't take it too cheaply the high topics that are not understandable for us, or if we are not on this level yet to understand these. So as we see also, we have Radha Krishna deities here, we have Jayanath Balad, Subhadra, we have Gaur and Tai. So all these deities have their different moods, their different likes, their dislikes. They like to eat certain kind of food, they like certain flowers, they like certain colors, certain scents, oils. So all of this, what the deities like or what Krishna likes and not likes, is actually written down and compiled by Gopala Bhatta Goswami and written by Sanatan Goswami in the book Hari Bhakti Vilas. That is a book that is, there are 20 Vilasas, or 20 parts of this book. It's a thick book. I have also one here, Hari Bhakti Vilas. And here is all information about deity worship and all other devotional services, how they should be properly done. So here is actually information from 200 different Puranas and Smritis and other scriptures. What is it shows us what is the effect of the worship. For example, we get rid of all kind of sinful activities. Of course, many of them are also that we attain heavenly planets, and many effects are written here. But it's a good. Of course, we cannot follow everything what is written here, because it's in West we don't have such flowers, maybe, or we must adapt it according to our abilities and according to our circumstances. But still, it is some good tips we can always get from here to be more devotional and more in more accurate and punctual in our worship. So as I said, to worship the deities, it's amazing opportunity that Srila Prabhupada actually has given us and brought us to the West. Because through deity worship, Srila Prabhupada brings actually such an analogy in Bhagavad Gita and in purport, 12th chapter, verse 5. There's a mailbox analogy, that there are many mailboxes on the street. And if you put a letter into the authorized mailbox that is authorized by a post office, then actually the letter will get to the person you want to send it to. It will be received. But if you just put it in a different mailbox that is not authorized, then it just stays there and it doesn't actually get to the destination. It is the same with the deity worship, that Krishna is like, comes here, and we can actually reach through this deity worship more easily to the destination we would like to go. It's back home, back to Goloka Vrindavan, and serving there. So so this is a gradual process. Again, deity worship is a gradual process, and by gradually engaging constantly our body and mind and senses, we are able, Krishna becomes more and more pleased with our service, and at last he's able to accept us as unalloyed servants. So what I would like to talk more about is also that today about our attitude towards deity worship, because it is easy to maybe know everything about the deity worship and learn all the rules and regulations, but as Bhaktivedanta Purnaswami actually says in his puja classes also, that it stays often on intelligence platform of only intelligence, so we must really engage our mind in it and put our heart into it to actually be able to do the deity worship properly. And the service attitude is very nicely explained in the prayer that we pray usually before the deity worship. Before the deity worship, it is good to pray for Guru. It is said that in our sampradaya we go always through the Guru to the deities and to the deity worship. So we become assistants of the Guru, and Guru is assistant of his Guru, and so it goes up to in our Guru Parampara, and it goes up to this then spiritual world. They are all assisting, because we are not able yet to actually understand everything, and we might make mistakes in our deity worship. But if we offer it to the Guru is actually offering it to Krishna properly, so-called. So it is nice always to pray to Guru first. And in the book of Pancha Ratra Pradeep, this is also a book that is all information about the deity worship and the prayers to the deities and to the Guru. So I would like to, just in order to explain what is the mood that we should adopt is the eternal servant of Krishna and the servant of Guru. So there is such a prayer before you do deity worship, and it is purifying the bodily elements by identifying oneself as the eternal servant of the servant of Lord Krishna. And this, the following prayer is like that. I am by nature the eternal servant of Krishna, but because of my bad fortune, I have been inimical toward him from time immemorial, and thus I have identified myself with my body and continuously wandered in the cycle of birth and death in the material world, suffering the burning threefold miseries. Now, as a result of some unimaginable good fortune, my spiritual master's mercy has enabled me to know that I am Krishna's eternal servant, an infinitesimal spiritual being, completely apart from the gross and subtle body. And so, by the order of my spiritual master, I have obtained the good fortune of serving his lotus feet and following in his footsteps, the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sri Sri Radha Shyamasunda, or for us, Radha Gopinath. It is also not to identify oneself as a Brahmana or Kshatriya or Vaishya or Shudra. There is a prayer that I'm not a Brahmana, I'm not a Kshatriya, I'm not a Vaishya or a Shudra, nor am I a Brahmacharya, householder, or a Vanaprastha, or a Sannyasi. I identify myself only as a servant of the servant of the servant of the lotus feet of Lord Shri Krishna, the maintainer of the gopis. He is like an ocean of nectar, and he is the cause of universal transcendental bliss. He is always existing with brilliance. And in regard to this service attitude, or attitude to be the servant of the servant of the servant, I would like to tell you a story that Radha Swami has told about the Ganesh Shyam Prabhu. Because when I heard the story, then I just felt that he is an example or a very exemplary servant of the servant of the servant, and how he considers himself to be totally insignificant servant. He was Radha Swami met him in the beginning days of his trip to India, when he was in Vrindavan and he was living on the banks of Jamuna. And every day after 9 o'clock, after he had been to all the temples to mangala aratis and offerings. He went to Ganesham Prabhu, who worshipped his deities in one house. He lived with the family, and he slept in the corridor, and he kept his deities in that cupboard. Of course, it's not the way you should follow, but I will more emphasize his attitude. And he was very devoted to his deities, and everything he did, it was everything he had to offer to his deities. He got 3 rotis a day by begging, and he offered them to the deities. And he was very sick, old, weak in her body. He had to get the water from Jamuna, and this process was very slow to him, because he could just carry the heavy bucket by like a few steps at a time, and had to take rest. And one time when Ravana Swami wanted to help him, because he's young and he's strong, then he just denied this helping, because, and started to weep and cry and said, "No, don't take it away from me, don't take it away, because this is the only thing I have. I'm just this insignificant servant, and this is like his strong attachment, not even give away or let the others to help, because this is his meditation to his Kopijanavallabha deities." The Kopijanavallabha was the name of the deities he had. And Ramana Swami also tells how he was living there, and he didn't have anything else. You know, the people didn't come often there, but he was constantly engaged actually in devotional service. He was singing songs and fanning the chamara and constantly in a meditation. So what I learned from this story was really this strong engagement with body, mind, and senses constantly in the service, because it is very difficult for us to just sit down even if Ganesham Prabhu was on the level of actually just sitting down and meditating on the deities or doing manas seva for them, he didn't want it. He wanted to engage his body and senses in the service of Kopijanavallabha, in the service of the Lord. So it is also the lesson for us to learn that whatever we do, we should engage our mind also, mind, body, senses. Often I have felt that it might happen in the temple that we are engaged only with our body and mind, body and senses and intelligence. We know the things, but sometimes we don't feel with our heart actually what we are doing. And in this case, I think the certain just readings and studying, you know, Srimad Bhagavatam, and this helps actually to also to engage the mind properly, but also to be more conscious and really what we are doing, for whom we are doing it, and which kind of footsteps we are following. We are following the footsteps of Rupa Goswami. That means that we are assisting our Guru, and Guru assists all the Manjaris as Rupa Goswami. And what more is important, that by constant service to the deities, our faith gradually also develops. We get more faith and devotion. In the beginning, it is difficult to understand everything when we are neophyte devotees, what do we do for the deities, or when we offer the lamp or incense, flower. It is often just a ritual, but by the time the faith and understanding and devotion is increasing, and as I said before, that first everything is on the level of intelligence. We understand we must offer the lamp, we must do 7 times around, we must purify before we do something, we must purify doing the achaman, we must purify ourselves. First it is just a ritual, but afterwards we understand the whole meaning that cleanliness is very important. Then when we do the achaman, for example, that there is much deeper meaning behind it also. When we do the achaman, we take a little bit of water and put it in our hands, then we should, for example, see the water and put the mantras, chant the mantras inside the water. It purifies ourselves of all kind of subtle beings and quite dangerous beings. It is purifying. And when you take this, drinking the body, it gets purified, and you can more properly actually be engaged in the service. And there are indeed, to worship, there are quite many such rituals that are actually taking away the inauspiciousness from the worship and bringing us more to the level of goodness, we can say, or more proper. As I mentioned before, that we are worshipping the deities actually in the mood of awe and reverence. In the beginning, it is needed because we are offering everything very opulent, like we offer to the king. This is by when the time goes on, every devotee actually gets more and more their own relationship with the deities, and in this sense it might be with Lord Nrisimhadev, it might be more with Radha Krishna, or some devotees like only Gaura and Tai. And the mood also might change, more into like parental mood or friend, mood of a friend or a lover. But it comes again with time. And as I said before, that Ghanashyam was very renounced and he couldn't offer much. He offered only a little bit of rotis that he had. Once he got a sweet rice, he offered to the Lord, but he didn't have much. But still, Lord accepted this kind of devotion and deity worship because he had this deep affection and love. So actually, even if we live in a outside, we don't have maybe so much money, then we do the deity worship according to what we have and what our capacities. Of course, in the temple, the deity worship should be as opulent as possible. And we should... we should offer to Krishna the best items that we can. Going back to the items, what we can offer to Krishna. There are certain, as I mentioned before, certain things that Krishna likes most. Krishna likes, for example, certain type of flowers. Mostly white and yellow flowers that he has, like he has today. There are certain colors. Yeah, white is the most auspicious color of the flowers, and it is also, there are long lists given in Hari Bhakti Vilas what flowers he likes. Of course, we are not able to offer them here in the West, but there is Jati flower. Jati flower is one of the most auspicious, and he likes it very much when he wears the garland of Jati flowers that is scented with camphor. He likes Kadamba flowers that are yellow flowers. He likes Malata flowers, Mallika flowers. Actually, these flowers are all also described in 10th canto when the gopis go to the forest and ask all the trees and creepers, all these flowers that are around Vrindavan. These descriptions are given also in Srimad Bhagavatam 10th canto. And there is also something that Krishna doesn't like, is actually flowers that are from the bushes that have thorns, or that have flowers that have spider webs on. Even if they are fragrant and beautiful, one shouldn't offer them to the deity. And if there are certain type of red flowers, are forbidden to offer to the deity. And but I think in the West, as we try to offer as many scented flowers as possible, but if it's not, then he accepts this. He also says he accepts the love and devotion and whatever we give to him. And of course, and there are also different food products what he likes, or different eatables. For example, he always likes when he's offered preparations made with cow milk, cow yogurt, and cow ghee. He says himself that they are fit for my offering. In Hari Bhakti Vilas, there is a quote about it. And usually, He likes most to eat rice with sugar and ghee, and barley powder cooked in milk and sugar. These are the two main preparations. And mostly every time when I also read, there are nice descriptions in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita by Sanatana Goswami, how when Mother Yashoda is feeding Krishna, there is also that the preparation starts first with warm rice, which is brought with ghee and sugar. So it is the first one, and then all the vegetables come, and soups, and liquid and liquid vegetable preparations, and sweets, milk sweets. And it is also said that if you cannot offer Krishna this, you cannot offer rice and vegetables, then Krishna accepts fruit. When you cannot offer fruits, even it's not possible because you are so poor, then you can also offer roots and twigs and even herbs. You can go and pick in the forest herbs. And if you cannot offer even this, he accepts the water. Okay, this is the less that you can. And actually there is one more. And if you don't have even water, you are just somewhere and you don't have forest, maybe you are in the desert, you don't have water, but you still want to worship the deity, then he accepts the manasasera. It is the worship in the mind when you offer him his favorite preparation offered in the mind. So this is a very valuable preparation also. Maybe in this sense we can please him most. And I would like to read the passage, actually, when Mother Yashoda feeds Krishna, it's from Sri Brihad Bhagavatamrita by Sanatana Goswami. And it is a passage when Gopakumar, who has traveled in many places to find his purpose of life, or to find actually Krishna, he comes to Goloka Vrindavan, and then he meets Krishna, and then they go to Krishna's home, where Mother Yashoda has prepared many preparations. And I would like to read this because this is a very nice passage and very lively passage to understand what Krishna likes to eat and what not. And so it starts. Now and then he also drank all sorts of splendid beverages carried in large bowls and pure water carried in pitchers. At the start of the meal, he ate warm sweet rice with ghee and sugar, very tasty, together with cakes, pies, jalebis, and flat breads. He ate other items fried in ghee, and he also had sweetened yogurt and various things made from transformations of yogurt and milk. In the middle of the meal, he ate fine white rice, warm, fragrant, and tender, with fried dal balls and dal wafers, and leafy greens and soups, and other vegetable dishes. He ate other items made mostly of milk products and mainly sweet and sour in taste, plus sour things mixed with salt and pungent spices. Toward the end, he once again ate sweetened yogurt, various other items made from yogurt and buttermilk, garnished with asafoetida and other spices. And while he himself ate, he also fed me. This was Gopakumar. Neither words nor the mind can form a picture of how Krishna's lovely tongue, rising to his dawn pink upper lip, while he chewed, sported within the cheeks of his lotus face, a face resplendent with the beautiful dancing of his lotus eyes and bow-like eyebrows. The gopis brought from their homes many sweets cooked in milk, ghee, and sugar, and placed them before Mother Yashoda. With wonderful playful gestures, Krishna ate from all the dishes the gopis had brought, praising every item and eating from each dish more than once. He thus made all the gopis happy, and he also fed some of those items to me with his own hand. Next, Sri Radhika brought Manohar Ladus, both small round ones and large flat ones, and set them down on Krishna's left. Krishna picked up a few of those sweets with the nails of his tongue and forefinger and put them on the tip of his tongue. He then made a face as if they were tasted like bitter knee. Krishna's brother smiled. His mother was angry at Sri Radhika, and his father was surprised. Radha's innocent girlfriends were pained, and her antagonists were delighted. in this case, this ends. And I think it's nice to read these passages in order to actually as I mentioned before, engage our mind more in the service. If we go and cook for Krishna, we can meditate on these pastimes. And I would like to end the class with a small kind of exercise, because we don't have nothing now. We have empty hands, we don't have water, we haven't prepared anything for Krishna, we don't have the roots. From the forest it's cold outside, okay. We don't want to go to pick the herbs, okay, herb garden is also far. So we can offer now something for Krishna in our mind. So let's all pick one item what Krishna would like to eat. Actually I forgot, yeah, sorry. There are also different things Krishna likes. For example, Jagannath likes a lot mangoes. He likes to steal even mangoes. He has stolen in Mayapur, they ran out once and stole mangoes from the village. And because they were hungry. And of course it was found out because small pieces of cloth were on the fence? There's some small pieces of cloth. So the villagers next morning came, who were these boys who stole all the mangoes? And then they found some pieces of cloth were missing from the deer's clothes. So they like, for example, mangoes and Radha Krishna, they like milk sweets, for example, and from Chaitanya Charitamrita, there are also many descriptions what Lord Chaitanya likes. He likes he likes also sweet rice. Lord Nishingada, for example, likes idlis, bowls with fruits and nuts, and he likes hot chutneys. So we can first, when we do this exercise, we can choose a deity to whom we want to offer something, and we may now choose a preparation, what we'd like to make, and for a few seconds we just close our eyes and we think for the deity, then we go, we make the preparation, and we can just actually make a nice bowl that is golden or silver, but we put the preparation inside and then we offer with love and devotion. Even if in the beginning stage of the devotion, so if we don't know the mantras, then it's good to chant the Guru mantra, even this is the basic, to chant just the Guru mantra and offer it through Guru to the deity. And this small manasa puja or manasa offering, I would with this, I would like to end the lecture because the time is so far. Sorry, I started too late. But are there any comments and questions?
Of course, roses. As far as I know, they always grow on thorn bushes. So, if you have any other kind of aromatic fragrant flowers, you should offer those and just disregard the roses.
Roses were not. Of course, it's Hari Bhakti Vilas. Roses were not mentioned. I think in West we can. There is also a rule that it should have a scent. It should be a scented flower. You know, fragrant flowers is in a priority on the list of the flowers. So if we have fragrant roses, of course it is because this is what we have. We don't have all these exotic flowers or flowers what they have in India, or we don't have lotuses or yeah. So we will do it according to what we have. But the first priority is the fragrant flowers. And we should see also that they are not like insect bites on, or this, it doesn't fall on the ground. There are many rules according to this.
And just cut off the thorns, it doesn't matter really so much.
And usually if we use the roses, we don't use the, we take the we take the stick off, you know, it doesn't. But the thorns, it may be also that some flowers are a little bit sticky or thorny. Some flowers are like, sometimes we have it, they are like, like mutants, in one sense. They look like mutants, and they have thorns on the flowers. So these kind of flowers, it's not possible to offer to Krishna. Yeah.
In the example of the mailbox which you gave, the mailbox is like an object which is kind of it doesn't have any life to it, but it delivers what you're giving, mm-hmm. right? But the deity itself, it's not like we're just putting something in the deity and it's going to Krishna or something, but the deity is Krishna himself.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So how can we combine these two?
It is just, okay, in one sense, mailbox is also, this is a quote from Prabhupada. And he was quoting it in explaining the Archivigraha form. But as I understand it, it's also that we can think the mailbox is, you know, nothing, but actually it's in one sense in active service. It is in active service of delivering the mails, because it's every day it is emptied and, you know, it's still like in an active function. So deity is also, deity is Krishna, but this is also in an active function for us to do our service to him, to worship his lotus feet, to touch the deity, and through this touch we get purified, we get more realized through worship of the deity, because otherwise it's very difficult. Through chanting the holy name, it takes very, very long time. It must be pure chanting until we start to realize his pastimes, his form. You know, yeah. But deity form is right, really. We are neophytes who come to the temple, you know, people also who don't know Krishna, they just see the Krishna, see Krishna, and they get at once actually affected, they get at once purified. So it is like they at once they put this mail in the, you know, the first letter in the mailbox that already goes to, in this sense, it's in an active function, it's constantly there. So it is, the deity is there for everybody, even the holy name, you know, also if people hear it, they get purified, but it's very difficult at once to understand, they hear Hare Krishna's chanting, and they don't realize at once, wow, Krishna's form is like that, he is in the three-band form, he is holding flute. So they don't realize it at once from the holy name. Yeah?
I was just to add, it also depends on the person's realization. Some people, they have realization that deity is a representation of Krishna, and it's like the mailbox. And the higher understanding is that deity is non-different.
Mm.
These are two levels of understanding of the deity.
Mm. But it is non-different, but it is also that.
Yeah, technically it's non-different, but when we talk about realization, there is a difference, you know, when you see it as a representation,
mm-hmm.
or you see it as a non-different. Actually, understanding is not.
Yeah,
it is a lot. But it is, philosophically, I mean, technically, theoretically, it's non-different.
Yeah.
When we speak about realization, it's
In the same topic, when Srila Prabhupada takes this example of the mailbox, what he illustrates by this example, the difference between stone, ordinary stone, and the deity, which is made of stone, just to show that because it is authorized, described in scripture, therefore it does accept service to the deity. Another example is given also about currency. Now the currency is also paper. There is also just ordinary paper. But because this currency paper has value, it is authorized by the government and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, it cannot be compared to just on ordinary paper.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to point out that the way Prabhupada uses this example is just to illustrate the difference between ordinary material elements and the deity, which is authorized.
But also that the deity is, like, we can understand the deity is a person. Thank you, and Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Jai.